Immigrants are often expected to express thanks to their host country, and most do.
Now, thank God, I am very happy because I landed in America.
Just want to say thank you to all the American people that support us.
This is the first time in our life that we are welcomed, and you guys are so kind and nice.
When immigrants are critical of their new home, though, there can be outrage.
Ilhan Omar has an awful lot to be grateful for, but she isn't grateful, not at all.
But Dina Nayeri has some very different views. Nayeri was born in Iran and moved to the U.S. when she was 10. She says she took a risk naming her new book, The Ungrateful Refugee. That's because gratitude is complex for immigrants.
Every single refugee is absolutely full of it every single day. They feel gratitude toward every small moment. But it's a very private thing. And the thing that I wanted to argue against is the compelling of gratitude posturing toward the native born. Kind of this feeling that immigrants get that they should go through their lives constantly bowing, constantly showing their thanks to people who had really very little to do with their rescue. I think it's just this thing that happens, you know, slowly after arrival. People start to tell their stories in ways that feel a little bit like posturing, a little bit like theater, in order to show, you know, how lucky that they feel. And then they continue on, always holding their tongue when they want to participate, maybe in the political process. And as they go through their lives, they, you know, create this kind of theater, gratitude theater, assimilation theater. And it's not giving their real selves to their new lives, which would be what's best for them and for the people that are receiving them or for everyone.
Dina, what is your own immigrant story? And when did you start to observe this burden of gratitude, as you put it in your book?
Well, I arrived from Iran after 2 years as a refugee. Those 2 years were spent in refugee camps and in hostels and various situations. I had been a smart academic kid from a respected family. They were doctors. We had very full lives. And I had expected, once this ordeal was over, once we were settled in a new place, to just find my place again in school, to have my mother find her place again as, you know, a doctor, and to be respected people in society again. But my mother had to work in a factory. She couldn't get her license back. There were language issues. And there was all of this hostility toward the Middle East. And I think people were a little bit afraid of us. And then when they learned that we were Christians who had found asylum in the States, they were more accepting. But they were always kind of wanting to hear our story in a certain way, you know, as in, we were rescued by America. We were so lucky. We had been so wrong before when we were Muslims, and then we found the right way.
Well, there's this moment,
God, thank you.
There's this moment not long after you arrive in Oklahoma, and there's a woman there who hears your story, and she sums it up by saying, oh, you came here for a better life. And you're miffed by that.
Yes. Our life in Iran was wonderful. We had a village that we would go to every weekend, full of orchards and hills, and we would hike and swim. And my family had been there for hundreds of years. We were happy because we were with our family and the people that we loved in a language in which we could communicate. We were respected. But then circumstances made us have to escape. And we ended up in Oklahoma, much, much poorer, in much more difficult circumstances. And so it felt very insulting to have somebody say, you must have come for a better life, because that meant that America by itself was better, that, you know, being a poor person in a tiny apartment in Oklahoma was better than being a doctor's child in Isfahan. And that's not the case.
To gain acceptance for asylum in the U.S., there are some pretty absurd requirements. And the asylum story, the actual narrative of why you need to be in the United States, really has to stand out. What details make for a successful asylum story, and how do these criteria differ between the United States versus, for example, the Netherlands?
You do need a story full of detail and full of particular kinds of memory. Now, the trouble is, a lot of people, when they escape, they don't store the kinds of memories that asylum officers want. Mm. Let's say you're in a car accident. Your car hits that pole and suddenly you remember the bag of chips flying across the air and the way the oil from the chips smelled, because your sensors are so very on. But the part of you that is storing contextual information actually gets really, really weak in those moments of trauma. And that's why when asylum seekers go into their interviews, They often can't remember what day it was, what time of day, how long did it take for them to walk from here to there, what was the name of that person who was sitting there with them, etc. And that's the kind of information that the asylum officers most want. And they conduct the interview in these exhausting, like, 6-hour sessions in which they repeat the same questions again and again in like 20, 30 minute intervals in order to trip people up so that people will give a different answer to the same question down further in the interview. And the funny thing about that, too, is that when people are telling their story and they get asked the same question again, they think they've been misunderstood. They think they didn't say enough, and they will naturally say something very different.
So you're saying if you have like a Hollywood level storytelling ability or a photographic memory, it could save your life.
Exactly. The people who are most in need, the people who have left at the last minute, who have experienced trauma, who have experienced shame, who've maybe been tortured, those people will remember the least, will have the patchiest way of telling the stories, will have a lot of cultural shame, you know, and many of them won't have the kind of education that has taught them how to tell a story effectively or how to read another person from another culture and whether or not they're believing you.
I gather, and tell me if I've got this right, but you're actually uncomfortable with how many progressives in this country make a case for immigrants by talking about how they make America great.
Yeah.
Explain that.
It's complicated because immigrants do add to the economies that they join, and they are almost always looking to regain their profession, to work hard, to build their lives and family, and that is a truth. But the thing that I was saying is that I feel that it's incredibly disingenuous and incredibly selfish for people in settled countries to think, well, what do they give to us? You know, when people are in danger of losing their lives, of losing their families, of losing, you know, their homes, how can we sit here and wonder what they could give to us? What gives us that right? I use we as, you know, Westerners. We're born lucky. Even I was born lucky. I was born into a middle-class family, you know. So with that luck at birth, that accident of birth, having put us in this position of extreme privilege, we then look at the people in the countries that were, by the way, ravaged by our country's desire to gain their resources. We look at them and say, well, what can they possibly give to us? Or, you know, back to the question of economic migrant versus refugee, have they suffered in exactly the right way? Are they being opportunists? You know, it's absurd to me, and it's really narcissistic.
And your idea that refugees need friendship, not salvation, does that kind of get at what you were just talking about? I mean, what do you mean by that?
I think so. I think all of it kind of has this central theme of trying to place ourselves kind of on equal footing. It's about dignity and about our respective place in a global society. So, for example, if a refugee is coming into your community and you really truly do see them as, you know, an equal human being who has had some really bad luck, you know, first of all, you're not going to mind them for their story so that you can feel better. Second of all, you're not going to put yourself on the perch of this charity giver and make them feel a lot worse about their situation. I think you would change your mindset and try to understand that actually this person wants to be more than anything useful. They want to be who they used to be. And so what can we do to bring them into our society and make them an equal part of it? I think I would really like for the native-born to think about what's going on in the psyche of these newcomers and what they might need and what they might need if they were in their shoes. And I think the biggest thing they would need, you know, aside from shelter and food and all of that, is love and dignity. They just want a friend.
Dina Nayeri's new book is The Ungrateful Refugee, What Immigrants Never Tell You. Dina, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.